Welcome to Innovation Destination, the podcast channel for supply chain industry professionals. This episode is part of our Executive Perspective series, where we will hear from the C-suite of the electronics and manufacturing industry. Here's your host, Managing Editor of Supply Chain Connect, Tyler Fussner.
Hi, Dave. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
And if you could please introduce yourself to our audience.
Sure. My name is Dave Tuttle, the Vice President of Data Intelligence with Breakthrough. Breakthrough is really a transportation technology organization that helps our clients to manage their cost and service and even sustainability as it pertains to transportation and supply chain. The company's been around for 15 plus years, and we're lucky enough to service some really cool and interesting customers, some of the biggest names or names that anybody would recognize with products that people probably consume every single day. We get to take part in helping people save money. That's always a great thing to be able to do for your clients, and it makes what we do pretty easy when we can come to our customers and offer them opportunities to reduce their total cost or optimize the way they do business. So that's kind of the high level for us.
Well, Dave, I'm really excited to sit down and talk to you today about some of the trends that we are seeing in supply chain today. My first question for you, what are some of the bigger technology trends that you're seeing in use?
I'd be remiss not to talk about generative AI or LLMs, large language models. Certainly been a hot topic, was a hot topic through 2023, not going anywhere in 2024. And I think that all sort of also leans back into AI and ML. And we see all these things as probably some of the most important technologies that will shape the way that supply chain logistics, transportation works, and a number of other industries going forward here. Someone made the comment to me that, you know, 2023 was sort of the year of exploration and discovery. Like we found out, like, what are these things, or they, the more the masses were introduced through, you know, companies like OpenAI and Microsoft and other organizations that are really embracing this. And now it's sort of adoption and application, right, of these tools. So I think that those are going to be some of the big tech breakthroughs or technologies that get implemented or utilized in our space.
And that's my follow-up question to you. With the onset of adoption, the adoption rate certainly about to increase this year, what do you see as the best use cases for AI or LLMs in supply chain?
I think one of the most interesting use cases will be capacity management, right? And an opportunity to find capacity that we may not have understood even existed, right? The ability to go through and build optimizations or string together information that some of it that may be, you know, well-organized data combined with context that these models can now bring together, pair appropriately, and show us things that we may not have been able to see otherwise. And so I do think if we think about what we saw through COVID, and I know in the space that I was working in, I spent a lot of that time in distribution, you know, we saw this crunch, this capacity crunch. How do we create more throughput? How do we do more with less or more with the same? So I think that'll be a big part of it. If we think beyond just that supply chain logistics space, I think that'll be a key unlock for a lot of industries, or even industries that service logistics and supply chain. So if we can go and pull together or look at large amounts of information as it pertains to, say, legislative change or any kind of documentation that might impact the way we do business, these models can help us go through that, pair up information that might be helpful in the way that we make decisions, right? The other side is, and we've been doing this for a long time, continuing to improve the way that we forecast. We've seen the introduction of machine learning into forecasting models, which has really created some interesting, albeit sometimes more complex, but interesting ways of forecasting and looking at what the future might bring. And so I think we're going to continue to see improvements there. And all that leads to optimization, right? And things like inventory optimization, throughput optimization. So I think these models, these tools will have an impact on all of those pieces.
It's definitely an exciting time. I know going back to what you said earlier in the discussion is we discovered what this technology can do, and now it's time to implement it. So my question for you is, how does that happen, right? Say you are an organization in supply chain. You're hearing what this could do for you. You want to incorporate this technology. Maybe you've spoken with companies like Breakthrough. You want to get these technologies integrated into the way that you do business. Where do you start? You know, what do you need to do to onboard such tech?
Breakthrough is a partner, right? And we want to help people enable these technologies. But I think that that's the first step, right? Leaning into the partners you work with, because there are a number of organizations out there like us embracing this technology, investing in the people and the intelligence to bring this to bear. So I think leaning into those partnerships, and even if you're using an AWS or GCP or some of these other providers for data management, those companies are investing significantly in ways to bring this technology to bear for their clients, just like Breakthrough is doing that in the models and the solutions that we create. So I think that's the first step, right? Reach out to those people you're already working with, or those people who are investing in this as a partner, versus trying to do it all on your own, right? Because it can be overwhelming, and the use cases are and will continue to grow, right? There, you know, I was talking to someone recently about the application in fraud protection, right? And the way that these models could be used to identify fraud on a much larger scale, right? Well, that some of those ideas, those applications could be daunting, but if you connect with your partners who are doing that research, utilizing those tools, it can be the first step into implementing it in your business.
So in approaching these partners and these other service providers, what are some questions that you want to bring up? What do you want to ask them, and what do you really need to understand so that you can move forward in this process?
I think one of the key things is, you know, like we're having a conversation today and we're talking about the application and the use cases, I think it's fair to ask them to help you decipher what the appropriate use cases are in your business. Number one is, these things take investment any way you look at it. You want to make sure that by making that investment, you can get an ROI, right? What's my return going to be on this? What are the opportunities that exist for me? The great thing about partners is, in many cases, they may have already done this or be doing this work with others, even cross industries, right? So they may have some ideas or concepts that they can bring that you may have never thought of. One of the things I tend to tell people is, we lean into the things we know, right? If I know this tool solved this problem for me before, I'll lean into it. But maybe I don't know there's a better tool or way. Asking those partners, hey, what are the use cases for me? What do you see as being a value add, something I can get an ROI on? Or what's the way that I can introduce this to my business in a way that will hopefully drive success, right? So that I can go to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
Yeah, experience is certainly key, especially when you're going to be adopting something that could be totally foreign or completely new to the way that you operate.
The key there is, you know, a lot of this is pretty new, right? So a lot of times you're learning as you go. So finding those people who have done some of it or who are working through it, I mean, that's going to be critical to success.
So pivoting the conversation to a different trend in supply chain, nearshoring. Nearshoring is becoming more and more common as of late, and I'm curious, do you have any perspective as to, you know, why there's such a need for nearshoring today? What does it solve, and how does an organization evaluate if maybe that's the right move for their operations?
Yeah, you know, nearshoring is an interesting one, and I feel like this is a topic that's been on everyone's mind, became top of mind or front of mind during COVID, right? And then we saw supply chain shortages and delays. And so it continued to heat up, right? And so I think the number one thing is, you know, nearshoring can immediately solve or can solve a lot of these inventory or supply chain risk, right, that come with products traveling long distances. I do think we're going to continue to see these changes. The other thing, if we look at it and we know what's happening, right, Mexico has shifted into being our number one in 2023, shifted into being the U.S.'s number one trade partner, right? So we see that shift happening. That's happened because people want to get closer to their primary customers. But the one thing I'll say, too, is that nearshoring doesn't mean we abandon some of those great supply chain lines or critical infrastructure that's been established in other areas, right? It means that maybe the way that we work with those areas has changed. One of the things that I tell people is subcomponents, some of those supply chains that have been built, those manufacturing supply chains, they're going from assembly to subcomponents. So you might look at it and say, okay, for my business, does it make sense to get my final assembly closer? Does that mean I can do more optimization of some of the components that do come from offshore and drive my costs down because I can ship more, I can ship it a little bit slower, I can manage my finished good inventory? So I think all those things will play a part in how companies make decisions, the security of their supply chain. And then we generally, I think, are seeing a shift to, you know, out of China into other Asia, right? Other countries in Asia. And I think some of that that's geopolitical, right? That will certainly have an impact on how those decisions are made. But I think you'd be remiss if you're manufacturing, distributing goods to not look at what's happening from a cost standpoint, from a supply chain security standpoint, and not looking at nearshoring as a potential option.
You hit it right on the head when you said that the nearshoring conversation really got a big spotlight put on it coming out of COVID. There were so many supply chain disruptions. Supply chain in general got a huge spotlight coming out of COVID. And so these sort of things are being reevaluated by every single industry across the board. Kind of tying our earlier part of the conversation into this, can you implement these newer technologies to help your organization evaluate whether nearshoring is the right move for you? I guess, you know, how do you really measure the supply chain resiliency you have in place?
I think you absolutely can, right? If nothing, these new technologies can help us model far more options for the way that we should manage our supply chains, our operations, our assembly lines, our distribution centers. And look, pulling into that, our carbon footprints, the modes we put into practice to move products. So the wonderful thing about technology is that we can break down and assess far more information, far more scenarios in a far shorter period of time, which will allow us to make good decisions faster or to make ongoing assessments of our supply chains that we may not have been able to do in the past. Because if we take it out of the hands of a single resource who may have to crunch those numbers or dig through that information, and now we can build models that we can run over and over again that are assessing millions and millions of data points, then we get such a better view, right? We get access to more information, more data points, and then we can simplify it in a way that we can then put it into action. So yes, that's the wonderful thing about technology and what it's doing for supply chain.
Yeah, it's certainly an enabler. It unlocks so much more potential, like you said, more informed and smarter decision making. Something else you did touch on with the carbon footprint being something you monitor, and that's, you know, another thing I wanted to bounce off of you. One of the buzzwords right now is sustainability. Everyone is checking in on how sustainable their business is. So I guess my question for you, any regulations that businesses need to be aware of or be on top of to make sure that they are operating sustainably?
It's an interesting question. There is a lot. And I'm lucky in that we have some wonderfully intelligent people on the legislative side who are digging into this. And I actually had a sneak peek here on our quarterly sustainability newsletter, which just happens to have a rundown of everything that's coming. And that's 25, 30 plus regulations or legislation in the works that's going to either hit the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Europe. And then there's a lot of stuff specifically around marine. And so, yeah, there is a ton. There's a lot. That landscape is changing, right? There continues to be a focus on what sustainability means, how those things are impacting business, and questions are being asked, right? You know, some of the top three, right, that I pulled out of for North America, if I'm thinking about in the U.S. primarily, the EPA is releasing the details around phase 3 heavy duty vehicle emission standards. So anybody who's moving product, whether you're moving it directly or if you're moving it through providers, the EPA is going to come out with standards that could impact the way that those providers work. That's coming Q1 of this year. SEC is doing their, is releasing their climate disclosure rules, right? So that's going to be big likely for the measurement of scope one and scope two emissions. And then there's also a lot of questions around within that climate disclosure rules around the impact of climate change on certain companies and how those things might impact their ability to function. And then finally, you know, California and their LCFS rules. And quite honestly, California's economy is so big and it impacts so much transportation. We anticipate that the rules that they set will have a likely have a fundamental impact on the rest of the United States. So yeah, it's going to be a fun 24 and 25 as far as sustainability and the management and oversight of carbon is concerned. I think we're hitting sort of a precipice on that.
Yeah, I think it's a little more unique or ingrained, should I say, for the transportation and logistics aspect of the supply chain, right? I mean, there's just so much pressure on reducing emissions and the shifting to zero emission or EV vehicles, and the conversation's been ongoing, right? But like you said, it's this might be the year where we're going to start to see some things rolling into action. You know, businesses need to be ready to enact and enable more sustainable practices.
We're at least going to know more so where people stand or where different legislative bodies stand. And so we can start planning for the very near future. You know, whispers turn into discussion and discussion turns into, I guess, legislation in some cases. And I think that's where we're at.
And so, Dave, you know, tying this whole conversation back together, what are some ways that you can really measure and account for and monitor sustainable practices?
I mean, I think about it a couple of different ways, but the first thing I would say is organizations should be doing some research, right? I mean, there are a lot of tools out there. The EPA has a lot of great information. Their Smart Way program, they put a ton of good content out there, which is specifically around how efficient vehicles are, fleet vehicles are, an assignment of that. The other thing I would say is, much like we talked about from the tech side, you know, lean into those partners who are investing heavily in this space. We're doing that on our side. We're working with a number of our clients to help them understand what their carbon footprint looks like. What are the opportunities for them to optimize there? And I would say that this is becoming an important part of many providers in the supply chain space, what they're trying to reach out and give to their customers or their clients. I've spoken with industrial real estate providers. I've spoken with distribution providers. We're all looking for ways to help enable the management of this. So I would say, you know, take that time, reach out to those teams that you're working with. And I'm sure a number of them would be happy to help.
Yeah, just having the conversation is a great way to get started.
Exactly. Sometimes you don't know how much information you may have access to or resourcing you may have access to unless you ask, right?
Well, Dave, thank you again for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your perspective and expertise.
Really appreciate you having me here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Innovation Destination. Follow us online at supplychainconnect.com or find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter to stay up to date on the latest supply chain industry news. Do you have any questions or is there a topic you would like us to cover in a future episode? Please contact us at editors@supplychainconnect.com. That's EDITORS@supplychainconnect.com.